turn things over to you.
Yes, you can. Thank you so much, Heidi, and welcome and congratulations to everyone online. My name is Tiffin Ross Shepherd, and with me today are Estella Hamblin and Don Workman from CIRB, as well as my fellow HSR colleagues, Amanda Borski, Crystal Henderson, Kathy Plowsick, Bob O'Brien, and Mary Walsh. Oops, let me get that. Now that your project was recommended for funding, you are about to embark on the just-in-time process, also known as JIT. This process puts all the legal documentation in place to start your projects. For those of you that have done this before, you know this is not a quick or small obstacle, and it requires attention to detail and persistence in order to get your project started. Please keep in mind that your start date is determined after you complete JIT. We cannot provide a start date until JIT has been addressed. Today we will cover the budget process, quad charts, IRB, data collection, DSMB, clinical trials, and intellectual property. As I mentioned in the email I sent all of you, we will be taking roll to know who is and is not participating. Since the audience is muted, we need you to enter your award PI name and or project ID in the Q&A field, not the chat, so that we can capture who from each project team is online. So I'm sure many of you are aware by now, ORD moved to the just-in-time process that is accessed through ERA Commons in January of 2022. With the change in databases, there is also a change in the process. The PI and signing official are responsible for uploading and submitting all documents. Secondary sites no longer have access to JIT, only the primary PI and their signing official. This means that the corresponding PI needs to increase their communication with their secondary sites. On this page, here are the links to the JIT webpage in ERA and the JIT help desk. JIT was opened this morning for all of you, and you should have received an email from the ERA system. Now that JIT is open, the clock starts. You will have 180 days or until November 4th to complete JIT. That seems like a long time, but you will be challenged to finish unless you start immediately. Please do not wait to get started. Again, we cannot stress this enough, and you'll hear this throughout this whole seminar. Upload documents as they are completed. Please do not wait until the 150 days hits to submit. We want to see progress in you completing JIT, and we want the projects to clear sooner than the 180 days. At 150 days or October 5th, if you have not cleared JIT, you will be required to submit a waiver to continue in JIT. Please note that ERA Commons is not as forgiving as the old JIT database, so establishing a clear plan to upload all of your documents is essential. We expect you to submit a revised budget using the JIT budget forms within 30 days or by June 7th, 30 days of JIT opening, which is June 7th. IRB should be a priority to get started. If your project requires IRB, you need to start immediately, and you'll hear more about this process later in the seminar. Additionally, if you have employee surveys, you need to allow approximately 8 weeks or more for approval. If you have a clinical trial, DAPs are required within 45 days of JIT opening or by June 22nd. Again, the takeaway from all of this is you need to prioritize JIT activities and start as soon as possible. Mary, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Tiffin. Before I start, can I just ask you to clarify the date? It's the slide said October and you said November. So the 180 day period.
The 180 days is November.
Okay.
180 days is November 4th. 150 days where they have to send the waiver is October 5th.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I just didn't quite understand that initially. Thank you. Okay, thanks for having me to talk about budgets. The first thing I will do is let everybody know that you do need to submit a new detailed budget and an updated budget justification as part of your just-in-time requirements. The revised budget that you submit should pretty much match and definitely not exceed the budget that was approved in your project application. The summary budget worksheet that you used in your application is not what we require in just in time. That was just for the application. What we need you to use is something called the HSR summary budget table. That next slide. Am I advancing my own slides or are they being advanced for me? I'm sorry, I don't know. Oh, thank you. Okay, so this is what our summary budget table looks like. This is the form that we need you to use when you submit your just-in-time budget. Please don't alter it. I believe right now it accommodates up to 8 or 9 study sites. If you need more, let us know. We'll adapt it for you. A couple things that are important to note are that you must use our most current version date, which is dated October 2023. We've made no major changes since then. Every time you submit an updated budget, you need to specify the version date that you're submitting to us. So update the date every time, because sometimes they go back and forth 3 or 4 times and we need to know which is the most current. Please be sure to enter the primary site and all secondary sites as highlighted. And when you are entering your year one totals, enter them for the full project year, not by fiscal year. Cleary does use fiscal year for their just-in-time budgets. HSR does not. So make sure that you enter for the full project year, and we will prorate it with finance here for the fiscal year. If you are, if you know that you're going to have certain large expenses, such as a contract that's going to happen at a certain point in the project year, let us know that in the justification, and we'll do our best to get the money to you at the right time. Also, please be sure to distribute the costs across all the sites. For example, do not lump all the participant payments in one site if they're going to be made at multiple sites. This is the budget that we give to finance, and it's what they depend on to make sure we get the right amount of money to each site. So make sure you distribute the costs across the study site, whether it's an IPA, participant payments, or any other costs. Next slide. As I mentioned, it's really important that we see the same total and not a higher total when you submit your just-in-time budget. If there are changes that are necessary, a minor increase, it has to be discussed with the SPM and approved by HSR and D leadership. I think by now everybody understands that we have a very tight budget going into fiscal year 25, and it's pretty safe to say that we will not be able to approve any increases to your budget. So I wouldn't recommend that you try to get a bump in your budget during the just-in-time process. We'll probably have to say no. Make sure you list the VA Medical Center name, city, and state for each site. If you're working with people from central office, just list VACO as a site. The PI or the site PI at each site should be listed first when you go down the list of VA personnel. And the rest of the people can be listed really in any order. We just need to see who's responsible for the money and the project at each site first. It's very important for each person you indicate yes or no for clinical duties or appointment. And if it's yes for clinical duties or appointment, you may not request salary support for those people unless you have an approved waiver for clinician salary support. Please make sure that you total the budgets for all sites and project years and at the very bottom of the summary budget table. Next slide. Please specify the terminal degree of all VA personnel. We don't need to have all of their degrees, just the terminal degree. For each person, please list the grade and step, including MDs. Even though you're not paying them, we still need to know what their grade and step are in case we need to do calculations based on what their estimated costs would be. It's important that you refer to OPM locality salary rates and use what is listed in there. Don't project what it's going to be next year or the year after. Use current OPM locality salary rates. You may build in a 2% cost of living adjustment each year. We know that last year it was higher, but over the course of the last many years, I think the average comes out to be less than 2%. We haven't updated that calculation recently, but 2% is as much as we allow. If you know that somebody is going to get a within grade increase, you may incorporate that into the budget, but you need to tell us that in the budget justification. And you're not permitted to include things like planned promotions. So if you're thinking, oh, I have somebody now that's a GS-9, but they're going to become a GS-11, you cannot incorporate that into the budget because that is dependent on HR and we cannot be assured that that's going to happen. It's important to know that all PIs and site PIs must have a local e-promise account at their current site in order to receive funds or to receive even a pink sheet for their project. Also, we get a lot of requests to update the information on the pink sheets. People say, well, my title's not accurate. That needs to be fixed locally with your local research office. The data that are entered in ePromise is what populates the pink sheets. So if you have a problem with the way you're noted in ePromise locally, make sure you get that fixed locally. PIs and site PIs must be 5/8 or greater, must have 5/8 or greater BA appointments unless there's an approved waiver for less than 5/8. And it's really important that the names, the degrees, the roles, the grade, the step, the effort levels, calendar months, and salary and fringe are consistent between the summary budget table and budget justification, or we will have to send it back to you. The SPNs review the budgets closely, I review them closely, and they're reviewed by Diane. And we frequently have to turn budgets back to the field because there's inconsistent information. But please make sure that the budget table and the justification are consistent. Next slide. Excuse me. This is just a handy reference for you to determine who you may or may not be able to include in the budget. You've probably already looked at this at the time you put your initial budget in. I would just encourage you to refer to it if you are including any sort of clinician, particularly. I think it's probably clear to everybody that generally for VA personnel, you can request salary support for non-clinicians. For clinicians, you may not, unless there's a waiver. I'm not going to go over this in great detail, but I will encourage you to review it. And if you have questions, you can contact me, and I would recommend that you copy your SPM so that they are in the loop, but I'll be happy to answer any budget questions you may have as you're working on your just-in-time budget. Next slide, please. As a reminder, please list only VA employees under personnel. People that are WOCs or IPAs or consultants are listed elsewhere. Again, do not request salary, VA or non-VA salary, for any licensed medical professional with clinical responsibilities unless you have a waiver already. However, if you have somebody who's a licensed medical professional and they are hired through the research office on the GS scale and they do not have clinical responsibilities, you may request salary support for them. So, for example, we sometimes see nurses and clinical psychologists who have VA job titles as research health scientists and they're hired on the GS scale in the research office. You may request salary support for them. However, if they're in a clinical position, as opposed to a research position, you may not request salary support for them. Again, physicians may not be paid unless they were credentialed outside of the US or are not licensed. VA personnel in the 2210 job series, which is an IT job series, cannot be paid using our funds. If you have somebody that you're saying in the justification, they're going to be extracting and manipulating data, please add a sentence that specifies this employee is a non-2210 IT employee. If you're wondering if you should include it, just include it. It doesn't hurt. It might save us having to send the budget back to you. So when you have people doing a lot of work with data, programming, and the like, please just add that sentence. And if you have some very unusual circumstance, please contact your SPM who can discuss with you whether there's potential to get a waiver. Next slide. The budget justifications are important that you pay attention to them and provide the essential information. We do not need to see a recap of the person's bio sketch here. You don't need to tell us about all their accomplishments, what they have done, and why they're qualified to do this work, because that has already taken place in the application. What we need to see here is what they are going to do on the project. So please make it short and sweet and focus on what they're going to do. It's important that you provide all the requested information, including their GS level, their VA ACE, their calendar months, which should correspond to what you reported as their percent effort level in the summary budget table. So for example, if their 10% effort in the summary budget table, we would expect to see here 1.2 calendar months. We know that there are some situations where people don't have full-time appointments. So if there's something odd or a good reason why the calendar months don't align with the percent effort in the summary budget table, tell us that in the budget justification so we don't have to go back and ask that question. If you anticipate any within grade increases, you can note that here so that when we check your budget to make sure that the COLAs don't exceed 2%, we'll know why for some, you know, in some year that it might do that. Thank you. Next slide. So as we mentioned before, all site information should be grouped and the site PI should be listed first. So put all costs and all the money that needs to go to a specific site with that site. VA employees cannot be paid as consultants in any circumstance. So if you have a VA employee, an operational partner, or anybody that's serving as a consultant, please do not ask for consultant support for them. In the justification, please describe the involvement of the consultant in a way that justifies the amount that you're going to pay them. The maximum is $2,500 per year and $500 per consultation. Next slide. For equipment, it's very rare for us to see equipment in VAHSR proposals. Equipment is defined as something I think that costs $5,000 or more. I'm sorry I didn't include that definition here, but it's very rare that we have equipment. Most of the items that we use in HSR projects would fall in the category of supplies. Audio voice recorders, for example, should be categorized as supplies, and they do need local ISO approval. We just make a note here too that you may use VA Teams and WebEx to record project interactions, but Zoom is not approved for recording. For equipment and supplies, note in the justification what you will do with the equipment or supplies after the project is over, unless it's something disposable like paper. In general though, office supplies should be provided by your VA medical center. Go there first, try to get the supplies you need from your local VA medical center. If they will not provide the basic supplies, please note that in your justification because we expect them to provide them. So that's really where you should go first. Please do not include any computers or other IT equipment in your budget request. If you have something that is IT related or looks like it might be IT related, please note in the justification that you have consulted with your local IT department and confirmed that the item is not IT or that they will provide it for you. Next slide. Again, while I just said that research funds may not be used to pay for IT purchases, there is one exception. Scientific software such as Atlas or InVivo may be purchased using our HSR funds, and you should include that as all other in the summary budget table and justification, not as IT. You're not permitted to include SAS and SPS in your SPSS in your project budgets because they are available in the Vinci platform and you cannot purchase them using our money. There is no approved process to issue VA-owned laptops, tablets, or any other mobile devices to research subjects. We continue to see projects asking for these things that they want to give to subjects. There's just no process for that. There's a work group in ORD that is trying to gain some traction on this issue, but at this time, we cannot approve those requests. However, you can buy IT-approved voice recorders using your supply funds, your supply research funds. Again, if you need IT funds from your facility for your project, work that out locally and provide notes in the justification that you have the commitment from IT to meet those needs because we will not be able to meet them. There's a lot of valuable information in this resource here called the ORD 2022 Research IT FAQs and Guidance. There's a link in the slides that will be circulated. I encourage everybody to read it. Every time I read it, I learn something new about IT and research. Next slide. So travel, if you have travel needs that are essential for the project, you can include them in the project budget. Travel support is not authorized for non-VA employees, but it may be included in the contractor IPA mechanism. So say, for example, you have an IPA staff member and you need them to travel for essential project purposes, you would want to build the cost of that travel into their IPA rather than asking for travel dollars. Awardees of merit projects can request up to $1,500 in travel funds for presentation of final results. That's one time per project. If there are multiple PIs, it doesn't matter. It's still one time per project. And the travel must occur before the project ends, and it must be included in your budget. There's also an opportunity for professional development travel funds for PIs who are not affiliated with the COIN. They may request up to $1,200 per year for the PI or the PI's designee to participate in a scientific meeting or other professional development activity. For PIs that are based at COINS, they may not request professional development funds because all COINS get a set amount per year of professional development funds that are distributed at the discretion of the COIN director. So if you have that need, that's something to negotiate with the COIN director. Next slide. For your travel summary, on the budget table, we just need the total amount per year. We want to see the details and the justification. And it's really important that you itemize them using actual VA government estimates. A lot of times we have, you know, 6 trips and they all cost exactly the same. That tells us that you didn't do the homework. We have to send it back to you. Please either have your travel office do an official travel estimate or use the link, the GSA travel guidance link, so that you can calculate the round trip airfare or personally owned vehicle costs, the actual lodging, you know, specify the number of nights that are going to be needed. Tell us all we need to know to approve this travel so that we don't have to come back to you with questions. We request that everybody uses a standard estimate of $150 for the ground transportation. We know it might be more or less, but we just use that as our standard for the estimate. And if it ends up being more, you will be reimbursed. Let's see, next slide. So as a reminder, HSR is an intramural research program, so we generally expect that VA staff will be hired to perform the research and provide the needed expertise. We are well aware of the challenges with hiring, and we know that sometimes the needed expertise is not available and that you may need to use contracted services and or IPAs to get what you need for your project. In those cases, we don't want to see the contracts and IPAs exceed 30% of the budget if the PI is based at a COIN, or 40% of the budget for PIs based at non-COIN locations, unless you have an approved waiver that was submitted during the proposal process. IPAs need to be justified like everything else in your budget justification. It's not a contract. Please don't refer to it as a contract. It is a registered agreement with the university or federal agency. And in the justification, it's important that you name both the name of the individual and the university or agency. We need to make sure it's an approved university or agency. There's actually a list published by OPM, and nearly all of the academic affiliates we work with are on that list, but sometimes people have a foreign university that may not be on the list. So please specify both the name of the individual and the agency or university where they work. VA employees cannot be paid by IPAs. Clinicians cannot be paid by IPAs unless they are not licensed in the US and performing non-clinical work for the project. It's important to know that contracts are for services, not for people. So say you're going to hire John Doe to provide transcription services. Please call that transcription services. We don't want to see the name of the person. All contracts must go through contracting and follow, you know, all the rules and regulations that go with that. So please specify the service, not the individual. In no circumstances can we contract or pay for clinical services. And when you are including IPAs and contracts, make sure you associate them in the summary budget table and justification with the site where the money should be spent, should be sent, sorry. Next slide. Participant payments may not be referred to as incentives or reimbursements. We see a lot of that still, so please do not call them incentives or reimbursements. We're actually paying the participants for participating in the research. Please do not state that payments will be made by gift cards. We know that many medical centers have contracts to purchase gift cards. We do not have the authority to authorize the use of our money for gift cards. but we do have the authority to authorize the use of it in accordance with locally approved procedures. So just say that instead of gift cards, please. If you are going to include non-physician VA employees in your research, you need to have approval from the ethics specialty team advising research for to pay them. And frankly, it's very rarely approved. We recommend that you pursue that before IRB approval, or should I say IRB submission, but keep in mind that it's unlikely to be approved to pay VA employees, even if it's outside of their tour of duty. Sometimes it is, but usually not. Payments to physicians or VA employees serving as research participants are not authorized unless they are participating outside of the tour of duty and they have approval of the OCG STAR team. Please present a table that shows us how you're going to make your payments, and also include a statement that unused participant payments will be returned to HSR in your justification. Next slide. We still make available to the field the use of the Centralized Transcription Services Program that is run by Susan Zickman at the Salt Lake City VA. The use of this service is not mandatory, but if you are going to use the service, we need you to attach an updated quote that is less than 6 months old to the budget justification. And we provide here and in our posted budget guidance, detailed guidance about how you should include the use of these services in the summary budget table and the budget justification. I won't read it to you, but if you're planning to do that, please refer to the guidance. Okay, next, please. Again, please be sure to always specify the version date every time you submit a new budget. Please be sure to include both the HSR project ID and the ERA ID. Every time you update the summary budget table, you need to update the justification. It would probably be good to put the date on that too, although we don't have that as part of our official guidance. And every time you update the justification, include a little introduction that tells us right up front what the changes are that we are looking for. And again, please do not exceed the total amount requested in your original proposal. Next slide. Just a special note this year for CDAs, the current RFA that is posted has good news for new applicants. They are now going to be able to request $75,000 per year for 5 years in supplemental research support. However, current CDA awardees, people who are submitting resubmissions, and new awardees from this around are capped at the former level. So if you're a new CDA awardee, you may not request this additional support. If you are at a COIN, you can still request $40,000 per year for the first 3 years. If you are not at a COIN, you may request $50,000 per year for the first 3 years. You do not have the opportunity to take advantage of the increased funding amount and duration. I'm sorry about that, but we just cannot accommodate it in our budget. Next, please. Okay, because of our budget constraints, the earliest start date that we anticipate for these projects that you are all working on will be October 1st. Now, if you have a special reason or need to start sooner and you get your just-in-time requirements met, we will consider requests for earlier start dates on a case-by-case basis, and it will be dependent on the availability of funds. Start dates are always and only on the first day of the month, and if we have a continuing resolution where the House and Senate hold up the national budget, this may impact our start dates. I think that might be the end of my slides. Do I have another one, Tiffin, or am I done? Oh, no, I'm not done. I have another one. Okay. There's been a real effort by finance to do a lot of training with the research office, and they're going to hopefully extend some of that to the investigators in the year ahead. Hopefully now, as opposed to a year ago, your research offices should be able to provide you with monthly budget reports, and it's really your responsibility as a PI to ensure that your budget is being executed as intended and as approved. So please do request monthly budget reports. If you're not getting what you need, you can speak to me and I will get Diane, our finance person, involved. We really want to empower principal investigators to manage their budgets more effectively. And we know that you have been challenged sometimes because you're not getting the support you need. And I'm sure there are other reasons. Maybe you haven't had the training you need, and hopefully that will change in the year to come. If you are delayed in your spending, please send the money back to us as soon as you can. The reason is if you don't, it's lost to our program. It gets pulled back to ORD and we do not have it in HSR anymore. If you send it back to us in a timely way, it's possible that we can support another investigator or another project that really needs that money. So please use the project modification process as early as possible to request returns of funds. We will consider a request to redistribute funds in later fiscal years. And again, that will depend on the budget outlook. This year, we were able to accommodate nearly all of the requests we received to do that. Now, I think yesterday guidance came out. I'm saying it, the last bullet here is that to let you know that finance will sweep your extra funds that are in excess of 2% at the end of each fiscal year. However, guidance just came out from finance yesterday, and I didn't update the slide. Those funds will be left on station, but they will not be available to you to use for your research. They will become cost center 101 funds for your research office. And the amount of money sent by ORD in cost center 101 funds to your research office will be reduced. So do not misinterpret the guidance and think that the money is going to be left on site for you to use. It will not be there for you. So if you're not able to spend your money, please send it back to us. We will find a purpose for it and do our best to help you redistribute it later. Next slide.
Thank you, Mary.
Done. Thank you. Please do reach out to me with any questions. Thanks, Tiffin.
Thanks, Mary. So now we're going to discuss some of the other documentation your project may need. Your project may need a variety of project approvals, which are listed on this page. All projects must complete a PI assurance, an ACOS assurance, quad chart, and submitting a revised budget. As appropriate, other documents like union notifications and non-veteran waivers may be required. Please note that OMB exemptions are no longer needed. Assurance forms are required for all PI, MPIs, and site PIs. All site PIs and MPIs must complete the PI assurance form. If a COI is at a site that differs from the PI, it is considered a site whether there are funds going to the site or not. The PI assurance form attests that to the PI's agreement to comply with VA policies and reporting. Additionally, PIs must be registered in ePromise at their site. The ACOS assurance form attests to the completion of the review by the R&D committee and subcommittee, including IRB review, as well as the PI's eligibility. If there are multiple PIs at the same site, both MPIs must complete the PI assurance and the ACOS assurance must be completed for each MPI. At this point, I will turn it over to Estella. Oops. It looks like you're muted, Estella.
How about now?
Perfect.
Is that better? Hallelujah. Yes, technology works. Well, I am Estella Hamblin, and I am one of the Central IRB administrators, and I will be sharing some information with you as you consider submitting to the Central IRB. So first off, on this slide, you will see the definition of engagement. So this is information for you as you are taking a look to see if you are engaged in human subjects research. And I won't read the slide to you, but basically take a look at the fact of the first bullet or the dashed line regarding if you're collecting data on subjects, thinking intervention or interactions with them, also collecting private information on the subjects, and if you are also obtaining their consent, then you would be considered engaged. Now, as you as a principal investigator, that would be one thing. Also consider any other local site investigators that may be participating with you. There in the blue text, the engagement of institutions is a great resource for you to take a look at. It's under the OHRP website and it has great detail. So if you need to read through that, I believe you will find that helpful. I commented to the site is engaged if you have a co-investigator that is also located at the site, or if you are receiving funds that are going to be going to that site. And also be taking into consideration any R&D committee approvals that you may need from within your ACOS form. And those would be submitted into the IRB's determination if IRB oversight is required or not. Next slide, please. Okay, so now you decided you're engaged. Now the question, which IRB should you submit to as your IRB of record? You have two options, first local or central. The first one is, if it is a single site, consider your local IRB. The central IRB is managing the more than one site. So two or more sites would definitely be appropriate for submission to the central IRB. But if you still have a question, please reach out to us and we would definitely be willing to help walk you through that. Next slide, please. Okay, now we are going to talk about our electronic platform. It is IRBNet. And what you see here on the slide is how to access it. You'll see some resources there. You'll need to request access so that you have a password and login to be able to access the system. And you can access this anywhere. So if you have your PIP card is one way to log in, and you can also do it by a username and password. And I want to make sure that you remember, if you do access with a username and password, remember it, because there have been many cases that you get so used to using your PIP card that then going in and using a username password, you tend to forget that. And I can attest to that, that has happened to me. Next slide, please. Here is another great resource for you that is on our SharePoint within the whole VA system. Now, what I want to highlight for you is that this includes a lot of information, not just CIRB specific. You take a look at the left side, the left side column, you'll see tools. You'll see FindPro. That is a platform where you can go in, ask a question, review policies, do a really nice search of information that might be available to you, that you can obtain that information without having to go to a live person. Maybe you're working in the middle of the night and you need to figure out what policy might drive the question that you are trying to resolve. Also, about the third one down, it's called Research Law Explorer. That is also a great tool. So if you have questions of what law might affect what it is that you're trying to do, you can search that application as well. A little further down is another example. You'll see it's called VEDA. You can also use that tool if you're taking a look to see if your research is research or not. The middle section are examples of the web pages that are available to you, and you'll see from third, from the bottom up, you'll see where the CIRB information is. You can link into that, and it's going to open up a lot of other resources that are available to you. On the right-hand side, you can submit a request. There's, like I said, there's information here that is just not necessarily CIRB. There's DocuSign, VA Box, single IRB exceptions. And then to the bottom right, also some additional information for you on forms and templates. So with that, let's go to the next slide so that we can look at, once you are in and you have requested access to IRBNet. Here on the left-hand side, to orient you to the slide, you will see Submission Manager, and on the bottom where it says Other Tools, if you will take a look at Forms and Templates. And then with a big arrow in the middle of the screen, you'll see select a library. When you're looking for CIRB forms for researchers, you will see their VA Central IRB Administration, Washington DC, documents for researchers. Once you request that, you scroll down, there's going to be many documents that you will find useful for you. There's going to be forms, there's going to be templates already prepared for you that then you will use depending on the type of research that you will be submitting. Next slide, please. Okay, and this next one is another tool just where we were, where I had mentioned about forms and tools. Right below that was library. Once you go into that, then you select the type of documents that you're looking for, and it would wind up being for researchers, with a drop down. And here you will be seeing additional references and resources for you. For example, the first one is a table of reporting requirements. So that will help you decide if once you have your research ongoing, if you have a report that needs to be submitted to the central IRB, it will guide you to what the requirements are, what the policy is. You'll also find flowcharts that will help you as far as if you're a principal investigator or if you're a local site investigator in submitting your project. You'll see the flowchart, and we have also included instructions, steps on how to follow that process. And at another one down below, you can see if you know how to submit for multi-site projects, how to create a new package, etc. So this is a great resource for you as well. Next slide, please. Now, I had mentioned about some of the instructions and workflows. So here is an example. So this is the one of, so as a principal investigator or a local site investigator, and it will walk you through how to follow the process. Left-hand side, you can see that's going to be the principal investigator, and it will walk you through steps. It'll give you some options depending on the type of submission you are submitting. You would follow that through, and then to the right-hand side is when your local site investigators will begin their process. And it also includes the steps as well. And it also provides you, once the project is approved, the next steps, and it's color-coded. In that blue are for the principal investigators, the purple local site investigators, and the green is what the central IRB does. Next slide, please. Here's the second part, and I know the screen is very small, so you will find these in IRBNet, which will be much easier to review. And these are the last steps, the 4 and the 5 of the 6 of the steps that your investigators will take. Okay, next slide, please. Now, tips for success. Just like my colleagues before had said, don't wait till the last minute. As the central IRB, we want you to succeed. We want to streamline this process with you. And we also want to share with you, you know, we understand your JIT deadlines. We do not manage the deadlines, but we understand the process that you're going through. So if you are in a tight spot, please reach out to us and we will do what we can in order to support. But please know that it is all dependent on how clean the submission is when it is submitted to the CIRB. So please review those documents critically for as clean as a submission as you can. And if you're a first time user, we are here to be a support to you and to a resource to help you navigate that process, because we understand first time submissions can be daunting. And also be ready to respond timely, as well as, you know, we respect that, and we need to do that for you as well to be able to help you as you go through that deadline time frame. As far as amendments, we just ask that, you know, it's all going to be dependent on your research. So we just ask that it be streamlined so that we don't have multiple changes occurring, which could delay the time for you. And we want it to just be as smooth as possible for you. So please reach out to us. And the next slide. And on this last one, here are some contacts for you. And I believe, let's see, earlier in the presentation, they were saying reach out to the central IRB to just to start that process. Yes, please do so. And once we have a submission from you, what we wind up doing is assigning a person. We call them a manager, a CIRB manager that will manage your project through its life. And that will be your go-to person. But until you submit these two, the email, and also you can visit our website information, but also I'd be very happy to have you reach out to me and I can help coordinate that process for you as well. Please know that we are a resource for you and we want you to succeed. Thank you.
Thanks, Estella. All right, so for the quad chart, all projects require a quad chart. And quad charts present a brief snapshot of the study across four quadrants of a single PowerPoint slide. And please refer to the JIT instructions of the quad chart template for further instructions. The most common error in the quadrant is quadrant four, which is the timeline. This section should not list aim 1, 2, 3, et cetera, but instead should list tasks and be similar to a condensed Gantt chart. Next slide. Non-veteran waivers, the non-veteran participation in a project will require a non-veteran waiver. And non-veterans include VA employees as well as caregivers. Research funded by HSR must be focused on improving the quality of health care and well-being for veterans and or ailments specifically affecting the veteran population served by VHA. For greater than minimal risk studies, PIs are required to provide a written risk assessment that includes the justification for enrolling non-veterans in their protocol. The justification clearly describes the nature of the risk and the plan to mitigate the risk. And the mitigation plan must include, number one, a description of how non-veteran data will be protected. And number two, where non-veteran data will be stored. And then number three, who will have access to non-veteran data. So please make sure that you include those three elements in the non-veteran waiver. If not, it will be returned back to you for you to complete those elements. So again, make sure you follow directions closely. And if you have additional questions, you'll need to contact your SPM. Next slide. Data collection, the requirements for surveys and interviews. If your project involves data collection using surveys or interviews, you may need to complete documentation if your project meets the criteria listed on this slide. So if your participants include VA employees and you're using surveys and interviews, then you'll need a union notification, whether it may be local, visit, or national, which we'll go over on the next slide, or you may require an OSAC review if you're using VA employees, completing surveys in which you're going to have greater than 10,000 participants or greater than 20 sites. Next slide. Okay, union notifications and the surveys and interviews involving VA employees. So, union notification, what is considered conditions of employment or working conditions? HSR takes a very strict approach on this process, essentially requiring that union notification occur anytime a survey or interview will be delivered to any VA employee, regardless of whether one deems the questions to be asking explicitly about their conditions or employment or not. So either way, you're going to have to do the union notification. This is due to the fact that in many cases, one could argue that asking about one's decision-making process or their thoughts about the implementation of an intervention could be related or linked to their stress level or opinion about the job itself, which is technically falls under working conditions or the condition in which one works. So there are several levels of union notification listed on this slide with the approval steps for facility level. If you're just doing a project and you just have one site, then you could do facility level union notification. You'll need to contact your local HR for approval, upload the documentation, acknowledging to JIT where you receive from HR. Visit level union notification. If you're using more than one site, but all of the sites are in the same VISN, then you can submit for VISN level union notification, and you'll need to contact your VISN HR for steps and approval. Upload the documentation acknowledging where the union approved your project into JIT. And then you have national union notification, and that happens when you have more than one site and they're across multiple VISNs. So you'll need to submit the information packet to the mailbox that's listed here, and HR will work with the Office of Labor Management Relations, LMR, to contact relevant national unions, and ORD will notify you when the LMR concurrence is received. Next slide. All right, so for national union notification, as I talked about before, the instructions, the detailed instructions are listed on this slide. Please provide all of the required information at least 8 weeks in advance of your proposed start date for the data collection. So this process can take 4 to 8 weeks to be completed. And also note that the unions are very prescriptive about the placement and language of the words voluntary, anonymous, and confidential. Next slide. Okay, so for OSAC review, OSAC stands for Organizational Assessment Subcommittee. And this review is required for all research and operation surveys that involve VA employees and that meet at least one of the following criteria as I stated before. So if you're administering surveys to 10,000 or more VA employees, or if you're going to be administering the surveys or interviews to VA employees across 20 or more sites. Next slide. Okay. So for the OSAC review, the submission instruction, if your project does require OSAC approval, the instructions for submitting the information for review requests are listed on this slide, as well as some contact emails if you have further questions. So the contact information for David Moore is on here, as well as the mailbox as well for additional questions. At this point, I think I'll hand it over to Bob.
Thank you, Crystal, appreciate that. I will start with the clinical trials registration. A clinical trial is considered to be any research study that prospectively assigns human participants or groups of humans to one or more health-related interventions to evaluate the effects on health outcomes. ORD is committed to informing veterans and the public about its research and maximizing the impact of the studies it supports. This includes requiring public registration and reporting of results for clinical trials. All clinical trials will be registered with clinicaltrials.gov. Next, please. To register with clinicaltrials.gov, first step is you wait until the SBM tells you to do so. Please do not do this on your own. If you register early, it will impact your reporting cycle, and you'll be asked to give reports when there's nothing to report on. So we try to time it as close as we can to the start of the study. When it is time, you will be asked to register through ART. You will receive an email, and this typically comes to the PI's VA email address, and you will be notified with instructions on what the registration process is. So you work that whole process with the scientific program manager who is assigned to your study and is reviewing your work in JIT. Next, please. You know, typically, many of the studies that are clinical trials also have to report to the Data and Safety Monitoring Board. This board provides ongoing evaluation of studies' progress, including patient accrual and retention, the monitoring of adverse events, and the adequacy and efficiency of the analysis plan to discern outcomes that might require study modifications or could result in early cessation of the study due to its benefits or harms. DSMB reports may be required mid-year or annually. DSMB reports are submitted through the ART website. Failure to comply with DSMB requirements may affect opportunities for future funding. We are working to try to get more frequent reporting in place for projects in order that we can prevent issues that typically are occurring later in the project. Next, please. Examples of studies requiring DSMB oversight. So these clinical trials, we look for ones that intend to provide definitive information about effectiveness and or safety of a medical or biobehavioral intervention, evaluate mortality or another major endpoint such that inferiority of one treatment arm has safety as well as effectiveness implications, or studies that may involve diseases with high mortality or morbidity involving high risks, and for large multi-center clinical trials. Studies in which prior data suggests that the intervention being studied has the potential to induce potentially unacceptable toxicity are typically sent to a DSMB. Phase three studies, with the exception of low-risk behavioral and nutrition studies, low-risk in this case referring to trials where subjects are expected to experience only minor side effects and interim analyses are not crucial for the protection of the subjects. We also have DSMB for high-risk phase two studies, trials of interventions associated with substantial side effects to subjects, such as side effects that could result in serious morbidity or death or are irreversible, trials of diseases associated with high mortality or morbidity, and trials of highly experimental therapies such as gene therapy. The DSMB, not the PI, is the ultimate determinant of whether oversight is required. Oversight may not be required in the following scenarios. A multi-center high-risk phase one clinical trial with clear and objective criteria for halting dose escalation if unacceptable side effects are observed. Clinical trials that are expected to accrue too quickly to allow for DSMB to be constituted and complete data and safety monitoring, and single center open label phase one and two clinical trials, provided the local PI has access to all data and there is an independent monitor to evaluate adverse events and make recommendations regarding stopping. Studies referred to the HSR DSMB are required to submit a data analysis plan for review by DSMB within 45 days of JIT opening. So that also tells me if you have a question about whether you think, you know, if you've been noted in JIT for requiring DSMB and you think you have reason not to, you need to contact your scientific program manager as soon as possible, because you don't want to cut into those 45 days any more than you need to, because these are a lot of work to get them in. And a lot of times, if there is a question, if DSMB is required, it may involve asking somebody within the DSMB to help give a judgment on that. Next, please. These are the instructions for submitting your data analysis plan. They're here on the slide, and they were also uploaded to JIT for you. So please note again that the data analysis plan is due within 45 days from JIT opening, which is about mid-December. And just a note, you will probably hear somewhere along the line that there are likely to be changes to DSMB policies that come with the reorganization. But understand the extent of those changes is still being discussed. There is nothing in place for that. So no changes are implemented this round. And if you, we don't want you to delay in any way in getting these things in. Okay, next I will return the lead to Kathy.
Thank you, Bob. So if during the JIT process, you need to make a change in your project, such as an investigator leaves, or you need to make some change in your methods based on your discussions with IRB, you need to complete a pre-funding modification. This is the bottom of the top of the form is shown on the slide. And it's very brief, and I suggest that you also have a discussion with your scientific program manager as well, so that they know that this is coming. But it does not, it only has to be signed off by the PI. It does not need to go to your ACOS. So, you know, it can be done quickly, and we'll make the adjustments in JIT if it's approved by leadership. Okay, next slide, please. So intellectual property, you know, under VA regulations and policies, all inventions must be disclosed to the VA, even even if you've already disclosed to your university affiliate. Even if you think your invention is not patentable, you're still required to submit a VA disclosure. You know, federal laws and regulations concerning inventions made by VA employees, regardless of whether or not the invention is patentable, requires that disclosure. And even if the invention is not found patentable, the VA can pursue other opportunities with commercial partners to further develop the invention, specifically a cooperative research and development agreement, a CRADA, provides management of new discoveries and intellectual properties that can result from the collaborations. Next slide, please. So even if the VA made no contribution towards the invention, such as the invention was made entirely outside of official working hours, unrelated to VA employment, with no use of VA facilities, equipment, et cetera, a VA disclosure is still required by federal law. You know, following the receipt of the disclosure, the tech transfer office will review the file and make their recommendations regarding ownership and submit it to the Office of General Counsel. And then OGC will review the facts presented and issue a legal determination of your right, of the right. Next slide, please. So should inventors refrain from publishing or making oral disclosures before a patent is filed? Yes, inventors should take extreme care not to disclose information that would enable someone skilled in technology to which the invention pertains to make use or to use the invention. Public disclosure could include talks, lectures, poster presentations, newspaper or newsletter interviews, publications, public use, sale, or offers to sell of the invention. Disclosure of any information prior to filing appropriate paperwork with the Patent and Trademark Office voids all international patent rights. So domestic U.S. patent rights are voided if appropriate paperwork is not filed with the Patent and Trademark Office within 1 year of disclosure of impertinent invention information. And on this slide, we have the email and to contact and the website for the technology transfer office. And also the website for the specialty team advising research, so that it's dedicated to research issues. Next slide. So once you clear JIT and you have a start date and your award starts, you may need to have a project modification. So in that case, you'll need to follow the use a project modification form that's available on the ORD website, and you know, follow the instructions that are included there. And when you submit your project modification, please note that the budget format changes, that you'll now be going to fiscal year, and there are other changes that are noted.
I suggest talking with your scientific program manager prior to submitting your first project modification to get some assistance in how to do that. I would like to point out that you'll be submitting your annual reports through ERA Commons, which are called RPPRs. These it asks if there are changes in the project. And if you state there are changes, this does not mean that you don't have to submit a project modification. This is, this will alert your scientific program manager that you're not in compliance. So please submit your project modification if you have changes. Next slide, please. So what are our best practices? So maintain regular communications with your research office and your ACOs. They are very aware of upcoming changes or changes in regulations or changes from central office. Review your status reports monthly to identify and remediate problems early. And if there are issues, contact your scientific program manager early. Next slide, please. And Amanda, are you on?
Yep. Thanks, Kathy. So the JIT timeline starts now. Again, as you've heard before, please start your JIT requirements immediately. Your revised budget is due June 7th, and the DAP for your clinical trial is due June 22nd. I saw there was a question about this in the chat. This is the June 26th deadline. If your project has not cleared JIT by October 5th, which is the 150 days, you're going to be notified in ERA that to submit a JIT waiver so that you can continue past 180 days. That 180 days is the November 4th deadline for when you should clear JIT. For JIT waivers, you need to show you've made progress. It cannot be a time that you're just starting JIT now. You need to show you've cleared some things, what you've done, what's to come, and what you're doing to move things along. Next slide. If you have project-specific questions, please contact your JIT Scientific Program Manager. And here you can see the names and that correspond with the review panels. Next slide. And again, also in addition to the review panels and other questions for who you can reach out to, here's some additional contacts and resources. Next slide. And so now I think we're going to turn it to Q&A. And I think, Heidi, if you want to lead us through this. I know there's a couple of questions in the Q&A box.
Yes, we have definitely received some questions. So let's get started on those. I'm just trying to find the first one here. Are there any planned curtailments to proposed budgets that we should anticipate incorporating?
You can probably take that question. There are no planned curtailments. That doesn't mean there won't be, but I can tell you as of this point, there are no planned curtailments.
Thank you. And the next question here. Last year, I was told to put in a 2% cost of living adjustment, but it ended up being quite a bit higher. If I update salaries to what they actually are now, my budget will be larger than what I was approved for. Is that going to be a problem for me?
It's going to be a problem for you, and it's a problem for us. We just don't have the money to increase budgets. It's not that we're hoarding it or holding it. We just don't have it. And we realized that when the COLA occurred last year, we did not allow people to submit project mods asking for more money. So in essence, that does translate as a budget cut that we hand off to you. I don't think that there's any scenario in which we can accommodate higher budgets. We just don't have the money. So I would encourage you to try to find efficiencies in your budget and your staffing model and discuss it with your SPM. But we really don't have the money. So it's easy to say we cannot accommodate those requests.
Thank you. Next question here. If travel for the PI, non-COIN, was not included in the initial budget, and we can adjust to include it without exceeding the original budget, can we add it at this time?
I would encourage you to discuss that with your SPM. It would need to be well justified and project essential. And if the SPM approves it, it's likely it will be approved the rest of the way.
Thank you. Next question here. Does the VA have gift cards available that can be used to reimburse participants?
So short answer is no, but there is there has been a pilot of some medical centers using VCS gift cards that are being given to patients. If you're interested in that, follow up with me. There's also, you know, there's two approved methods for paying research participants. It's electronic fund transfer or Direct Express, which is kind of like a Visa credit card. Many veterans have them already, and it's possible to add funds to them. And if you want more information on any of these methods, I would recommend you contact me, Mary Walsh.
Great, thank you.
MaryWalsh3@va.gov. Sorry.
Thank you. Next question here. If we have two sites, is it an option to go through the local IRB at both sites, or do you have to use CIRB?
I don't know if Dawn is still with us.
Are you able to hear me now? Oh, go ahead, Dawn. Okay.
Currently, it would be acceptable to have one of the two research offices submit a single IRB exception. We are going to change to tighten the requirements in the next several months. I don't have a timeline for that. So just be aware that is currently acceptable. When we change it, there will be an announcement. It'll be in the webinar, et cetera. But we are going to ask more questions and may limit it to some number. I don't have the decision has been being yet, so I can't tell you what, but at present it is acceptable. Over.
Great, thank you. Next question here. What is the December 14th deadline listed on the DSMB requirement slide? And when would 45 days after JIT opening be for this round of grants?
Hi, Heidi, I think that's answered. It's June 22nd is 45 days when DAPS is due. The 14th, December 14th should not be on that slide.
Yep, I know that it was answered written here, but that's not captured for the audience that's going to be listening to the recording.
So got you.
Just getting it for those people because we have less than half the people attended today. So I want to make sure we have it for the rest of the people.
June 22nd is the answer. DAPS are due.
Thank you. Next question here. We already have gift cards that were donated to use for participant payments, and we are not requesting any additional money for participant payments. Do we need to list the gift cards in our budget?
I don't really know the answer to that, and I think it's a case where I would say discuss with the SPM. If there's a need to show what's being contributed, you know, generally, contributed resources are shown in the justification. So I don't see a downside to that. You know, to put in participant payments in the summary budget table and say zero and then explain why in the justification. I don't know if any of my colleagues have a different view on that. Hearing none, I guess we'll go with that answer.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next question here, just to clarify on a prior question, is it acceptable to go through the local IRB for two sites?
Yes, this is Don. What I was clarifying was if you go through two sites, you're gonna have to have a single IRB exception. It's not acceptable to go through two sites and not have a single IRB exception. So one of the two research offices will need to apply for that. It may be in the future that may be trimmed down so that you can't do it if they're both VA sites because the central IRB has reliance agreements with all of them. But presently, you could do that and have one of the sites submit for a single IRB exception. Over.
Great, thank you. Next question here. We have COIs at another site, but they are not interacting with participants or requesting money, and they will only have access to de-identified data. Would the site be considered engaged? Would we have to go through the CIRB?
Can you repeat the first part of that? I'm sorry.
Of course. We have COIs at another site, but they are not interacting with participants or requesting money, and they will only have access to de-identified data. Would the site be considered engaged, and would we have to go through the CIRB?
Yeah, typically if you have a co-investigator, if you have an investigator on a study, they're considered to be engaged in the research. You can certainly go through the local site and see if they would give you a non-engaged determination, but generally speaking, wherever there's an investigator, whether there's funding or even with the de-identified data, the interpretation has been that they're engaged. So you would need to have IRB approval or exemption approvals at those facilities. And if it's exempt, there's no requirement for single IRB. It's only if it's non-exempt research, the common rule requires a single IRB, except when it's not feasible. And if the individual wants to write to us, we'd be happy to answer specific questions.
Over. Great, thank you. Next question here. What is the typical wait time for CIRB approval?
Our current time to approval for exempt projects is about 35 days, and there is some slop in that number. So don't quote me too far on it, but it's roughly a month. And the last time we ran the numbers, about half of the time is waiting for the PI to respond. So it's roughly half time in our court, half time in the investigator's court. Our goal is to get a response back to you within 10 business days. That doesn't always happen because we have vacations and things like that, but that is our goal, and we're actually fairly good at getting to that number. Over.
Fantastic, thank you. Next question here. Just wanted to clarify something about VA employee interviews. We anticipate interviewing 30 VA MDs nationwide for our qualitative interviews. Would we submit a national union notification?
Yes. Yes, you'd need national union notification.
Fantastic, thank you. I'm just double checking if there are any other questions out here, because it looks like those are all of the questions that we received in today. Yes.
One thing that I'd like to point out regarding the start date of October 1, when we say we want to have a start date of October 1, we still need you to clear JIT prior to that time, because finance will stop accepting starts probably, what, Mary, do you think in July?
I would say mid-July to early August. It varies from year to year.
So if you want to start October 1, you need to aim to get through JIT by July. So, and then you can name your start date. And you want to get in that, you want to make sure that you have your request for start in, because it's inevitable that we will have a continuing resolution and we may not be able to give you a start date until next January. If you aren't in the ITA for the next fiscal year.
So it's really important
for you guys to clear JIT as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob.
I'm just backing you up and saying that, you know, the closer we get to the end of the fiscal year, the more careful we need to be, and we need to be ahead of schedule. And that also, getting in ahead of schedule also may help circumvent anything that comes up with continuing resolutions or shutdowns or whatever could happen. Because if, for example, this year with the continuing resolution, we were able to start a few studies, but many of them had to wait until well into calendar year 24. Even though fiscal year 24 started in October, there's very limited funding for new starts. So and things end up getting delayed. So if you can do it, great. You know, go ahead and, you know, take advantage of trying to get it in for October 1.
Great. Thank you. We did get one other question. Quick, if we can fit that in. For AIM 1, we are performing employee and veteran interviews at 3 sites. Investigators are from the main site only. Do we need IRB approval from each site or central IRB approval? Or will IRB approval from the main site be enough?
Hello, just making sure you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, excellent. We have had protocols where they are going to be starting like the first phase, the first AIM, and then they're going to be building on. So, and in this case, it's the expectation is that it is going to be multi-site, but you're starting out with phase one at this point, which may be with certain investigators, but not yet multi, but you're going to build to that. You can have that already written in your protocol and just describing it as, you know, AIM one, have that description, and then AIM 2, that description, and when it may start. And if you expect it to be multi-site, then it sounds reasonable that you would submit to the central IRB.
Great, thank you. It looks like we are back to that as all of the questions we've received. Just checking in once again if any other panelists have any comments they'd like to make before we close today's session out.
No, we really appreciate everyone's participation today, and we really look forward to getting to working with you to get these projects started. We want to try to improve veterans' health, and we want to see your projects, you know, get underway.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to all of our panelists for preparing and presenting today. We really do appreciate it. For the audience, thank you everyone for joining us today. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we hope to see you at a future HSR Cyber Seminar. Thanks, everyone.